This is the DMT 1-to-1 show, episode 14, on the 20th of June 2013, an interview with Mixler. This is the DMT 1-to-1 show, and I'm really happy today to welcome Greg Lloyd, the CEO of Mixler. So hi, Greg, and great to have you on. How's it going?
Hey, yeah, good. Really good. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, it's a warm day, even though it's quite muggy. I think it's going to rain soon. And
it's been super humid, hasn't it?
Yeah,
Definitely.
I want to hear all about Mixler. I don't think I've had you on the show before. Is that right?
Yeah, no, you haven't. I mean, I've been waiting for the invite. I don't know what's going on.
I'm so sorry. I was gonna say let's do an update, but actually we have to start from scratch and talk about Mixler and how the company has evolved. So tell me all about the company. You know, when did you guys start out, and how did the company evolve over time?
Yeah, first things first. So Mixler, obviously, we're a platform for live audio.
Yeah,
make it really easy for people to broadcast live audio online from your iPhone or from your desktop app, and that's essentially what we do. But on top of that, we've got like a social experience on top of that, so that you can see everyone who's listening, interact and engage, and turn like a live audio broadcast into an online experience. And the whole thing came from myself and my co-founder Rob. We were at uni a few years back now, so what, 5 years back, and we were both musicians studying computer science and music, and we wanted a way to be able to broadcast our content live online, and we couldn't believe how hard it was to do, to actually set up live audio streaming.
Yeah.
So we were both, because we were learning to code at the time, we just went about basically building a basic prototype application, which just did the simple function of just making it really easy to take an audio source and broadcast it live online.
That's great.
And we put it out there, and pretty soon we had lots of people using it, and we realized that it was a bigger issue than what we first thought, and pretty soon we had all kinds of interesting use cases.
Yeah, sure. And so how do you go about developing the product? Because I know that, as you find these use cases and your load increases, then you have to think about the audience, think about the creators. And so what were the main, I guess, milestones and issues that you managed to solve with Mixler through time that you found were most challenging for you?
Yeah, I think, technologically, it's doing live is actually quite difficult to do, but once we got over that first hurdle of actually figuring out how we could do it, we listened to our users a lot. We talked to them all the time, and we were building it for ourselves. It was for our own use case. So as we were using it ourselves, we kind of knew the features we wanted, and we've always been in touch with our users and in listening to their feedback and making sure we implement what they need. And because myself and Rob were both coders, we were able to move quickly and build things very quickly.
Yeah.
That's how we've approached it from the start, and that's how we're still approaching it. We just build things quick, put it out there, test them, get feedback, kind of MVP, iterative development the whole time. So yeah, that's how we've approached it from the start.
Sure, and looking at the different platforms that you broadcast on, so you have iPhone app. So when did that come about, and how? Or what's the uptake on that?
Yeah, so the iPhone app was a big step for us. Actually, we released that at the end of December.
Right,
and I think from a consumption point of view, it's huge, because people love listening on the devices now. So, and it's really good for us to be able to push updates to the retention on iPhone apps is much higher and really good. So from a consumption point of view, it's really good for listeners. But additionally, I think these things are phenomenal as a broadcast tool.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the use cases we're getting of people broadcasting via their phone is great, whether it's, football podcasts, people that the fans in the pub after the match, just putting their phone on the table and just broadcasting their podcast live from the pub straight after the football match. It just wasn't possible before. So this from a production point of view, And from a broadcasting point of view, this is going to be really big for us, I think, going forward. But and it's been going really well ever since we launched it.
That's great. And so talking about the different use cases, of course, mobile it's a very interesting for you, especially because it's audio only. Because I know that I spoke to the guys at Livestream a couple of months ago, and they are still having issues with the bandwidth, of course, and stuff like that when it comes to doing live streaming of audio or video of any kind. Whilst audio is a little bit more manageable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from a listening consumption point of view, the bandwidth overheads are a lot less, about one fifth of the size, and exactly. And the same when we're broadcasting. You just can't do live video really over 3G. It's just not really possible. So
until 4G comes up, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that works well. And plus, the production overheads, I mean, video is really mature, really. It's surprising if you look at, as a technology, videos really very mature compared to audio. Audio is just really starting to take off, and I think the introduction of or the growth in mobile has really helped with that, because the real estate you get on your phone is so small. If you want to watch a video, you can't do anything else. You have to just consume that video. But with audio, you can play with other apps, plus you can actually socialize and interact around the audio. So I think it's sound and audio is really just starting to take off, and we're only now starting to see the possibilities of where it could go.
And talking about your relationship with SoundCloud, for example, it's a service that, of course, it's the first service that comes to mind when you think about a platform like Mixlr, as a very intuitive tie-up. So how do you work with those guys?
Well, I mean, we've always had a good relationship with those guys, always respected what they've done. I mean, I remember myself and Rob, we won the first Music Hack Day SoundCloud competition, and like back in the day before Mixlr, and we went out to Berlin and spent some time with those guys, and we've been chatting to them ever since. They're a great company, and I think it made sense for us at the beginning to, so for example, when you broadcast via Mixlr, once your show's done, you can one-click export it to SoundCloud.
Right.
You can also export it to Mixcloud and Dropbox and various other services. But that was one of the first features we built because it just makes sense. They've got such a great community of content creators on there. And but the relationship is, there's nothing formal there. It's just we think they've got a great product, great API, exactly. And we just make good use of it.
Yeah, sure. And talking about users, do you have any milestones that you can talk about in terms of usage of Mixlr?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we recently, so last month, we reached over 1 million users, which is really good milestone for us. We're really proud of that. And considering we've only really just started to get the product to where we want it to be, we've got lots to come, and we've only started to scratch the surface of what's possible.
Yeah, and going back to the product side, there's also a desktop app for the Mac. So this is called Mixlr Basic. Do I understand that it's still a beta product?
The desktop app at the moment is in beta at the moment. Again, we had an initial version out, and there were a few bugs with it, and so we kind of listened to our users, wanted to find out what sound cards they used and what equipment and how they wanted to broadcast, and we just kind of stripped it all down and just gone back to basics with it. And the reaction has been, it's been really good, and now we're able to expand our team. We've got someone working full time on that, so it's really going to start. We're going to add a lot of features to that. That is the foundation of what we do. That broadcasting app is where we add value for broadcasters. So that's really where our focus is going forward.
Yeah, and it looks like a very nimble app as well. So it's something that you could probably be run alongside other applications without impacting too much the workload of a computer, which is a really big problem for most people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's compatible on Windows and as well as Mac as well. So, but we're kind of just rolling out features. MVP. The trouble you normally have with desktop applications is it's hard to update quickly and move quickly with them. So we kind of don't want to do, we want to be able to change things quickly with it. So we're making sure that that's possible, and that's why we kind of call it the beta app at the moment.
That's great.
So that we can add new features quickly.
Of course. And looking at music versus talk, so that's something that all the services that are dealing with audio and video, I guess, so broadcasting and consumption are having to deal with at the moment. So what is your ratio, and do you have more musicians using it, more talk people using it?
Yeah, I mean, we have such a mixture, really. It's such a wide, I mean, everyone from community radio stations in Rwanda using us as their main technology to actually broadcast to their local community, all the way to during the Thai floods a couple of years ago, we were one of the main sources for people to get updates on what was going on,
yeah,
in terms of road closures, etc., because no one had electricity, but everyone had phones, and that was the only way they could actually get the updates. So those were use cases we had no intention. We didn't build that thinking that something we were building in my bedroom was going to have such an impact.
Yeah.
So we've had that aspect. Then, as I mentioned earlier, we've had like the sports podcasts and talk shows are obviously quite big. But then on the other side of music, we're starting to see some really interesting use cases there. I think streaming of live events, it's only really just beginning to be a real demand for this. And one thing we're seeing is that there's, you know, the production overheads for doing video well are really, it's really high. You know, you need a budget, you need a few thousand pounds or whatever to actually be able to stream a good quality live video.
Yeah.
But with audio, you can literally just take a feed out of the mixing desk,
that's right,
put it into your, into our desktop app, and you're broadcasting high quality audio. So people are, that's a really interesting use case. And we've had some guys like Widespread Panic, who are quite a big band in America.
Yeah.
They're using us to do their whole street, their whole tour at the moment.
Right.
Instead of just reaching a few thousand people in the stadium, they're able to reach hundreds of thousands of people online, which is really, really good for them. So that's one place we really see it being of use for musicians. And another one is album previews. So people being able to like throw listening parties for their albums.
That's great, yeah.
And we've had a few good use cases of that, like What Records and Orteca did a really interesting album party show, which was a huge success. So those are kind of the two areas where I see them being really useful for musicians.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think also of levels of gating. Have you guys thought about any types of gatings for the broadcasts in the sense that, for example, a musician could add this to one of the pledge perks or to the Kickstarter perks of their campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good idea. That's something we are looking at. Anything we can add value for artists and the content creators and broadcasters is definitely something we'd consider. But I think primarily our focus is just still to make it as easy as possible. We've only scratched the surface with making it easy.
Yeah.
And we've got a hell of a long way to go to make it just drop dead simple.
Yeah.
Sure. So that's the main focus at the moment. But yeah, I can imagine, yeah, Kickstarter stuff, pledge music stuff for live shows would be awesome.
Pretty interesting, yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, and finally talking about monetization, which is always the last thing, but I guess it's pretty important for
yeah,
any
absolutely.
Company that interviews. So you guys have a freemium model, so it's a free tier and a pay tier. It's quite simple, isn't it?
Yeah, super simple. $9.99 a month. You just are able to stream at a higher quality. And it's amazing, you know, if you build a product that adds value, yeah, people will pay for it.
Yeah,
you know, it's simple as that. And if you actually charge, so we're finding it's going really well. Similar to how SoundCloud have monetized as well.
Yeah.
We just want to build as much value for the broadcasters and charge for it.
That's great. It's great. And so they're certainly going in a different direction than some of the other audio services that are, for example, integrating radio stations or doing stuff like that, where there's a advertising having component that can be a nuisance at times. So it's interesting to see this model as well working out for you guys.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time. And
nice. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's mixler.com. Go and check out the website. Or if you are on iPhone, just search for Mixler on the App Store and download it. It's super easy to do your own broadcast in literally like 5 seconds. It's I don't think it takes more than 30 seconds to actually log in and get up and running. So it's pretty cool. It's great.
Cool. Awesome.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks. Have a good day. Take care.
If you enjoyed the show, remember to check out our weekly music tech news show on digitalmusictrends.com.